Did you know that Chuck Norris isn't just a long-dead internet meme? He made a bunch of movies. One was called Invasion USA, and it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America. The number one movie in America. The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
It is the number one movie in America. My name's Sean Collier, and I'm here with an Elysium metaphor I don't want to bother thinking up worth of movie people. Like, what even... An underground... We all have our tickets to Elysium.
I guess so.
That was the thing.
Yeah, like, that's like the best I could think of.
On the way in here, I was like, oh, I got to think about an Elysium thing for when I introduce everybody. And I was like, I don't want to think about Elysium anymore.
That's
and
right.
I just, I'm Sean Collier. There's Camila Adams.
Hello.
And Robin Hitchcock.
Hi there.
Aaron Kleiber, once again, could not join us today. He did not text me any thoughts about Invasion USA.
He's a poopy head.
It really is a shame because I feel like since Sharky's Machine, this is the movie that he would be the best representative audience
exactly.
for.
I thought for sure. I was very prepared for how much he was going to enjoy
me
this
too.
Movie and how much he was going to talk it up and how stoked he was going to be about
yes.
it.
Yes. Well, Aaron, you can borrow one of our DVDs.
You can take mine.
All had to buy this because our schedules are so difficult to coordinate and it's not available to rent streaming wise.
No, it is nowhere.
Yeah.
I will say, if you come to see single player stand up at Arcade Comedy Theater, that's a plug.
Mm-hmm.
There's frequently, me and Julia like to give out prizes to audience members. I'm just saying, at some point soon, somebody's getting Invasion USA. Because, like, it's not like I'm going to go back to it. It's not like I'm going to go back to the exchange and be like, I paid you $8. How much will you pay me? $2? All right, $5. It's going to be. Aaron, when I told Aaron that we were doing this, he replied, yes, the mini Uzi. So I guess those count,
okay.
count as his thoughts.
Those are his thoughts.
And he said it was one of the coolest movies in the world when I was 8 years old.
So, wow. Okay. So he had seen this.
Of course, he had seen
of
this.
Of course.
I would have bet a solid $20 that he had seen this.
Well, if you haven't, and I understand because there's no good way to, but boy.
More reason.
Boy, do I. I mean, no, there's no reason. But, like, I want this to be on the TV when everyone's, like, beer drunk in a vacation home.
Right.
Definitely.
You know,
yeah.
You're at your aunt's cabin in Virginia Beach, and they have one VHS tape. I want it to be Invasion USA.
Yes.
That's exactly what that is, the prime placement for this movie.
But if that hasn't happened to you so far, let's do a 60 second or less recap of Invasion USA. This week's contestant is Robin Hitchcock, and I will handle the timer. Robin,
did not try to see if this is under 60 seconds.
Oh,
so
okay.
it's a real game this week.
Isn't it just the word boom 18 times? Okay, Robin, go.
Okay, we open on a boat full of Cuban refugees, and an American boat pulls up, and we're like, oh no, they're going to get arrested. But then he just says, bienvenidos a los Estados Unidos, and then murders them all with machine guns, and there's drugs in the boat. Those are never relevant again. Oh,
no.
Except for he meets up with Billy Drago, and I'm like, oh, here's the real villain. But then he immediately shoots him in the dick. So we spend like 20 minutes with this villain and before Chuck Norris even shows up. All he really does for the first half of the movie is go around on his fan boat and wrestle an alligator. And then boats full of Cuban mercenaries show up and they invade USA. They take trucks to suburban areas throughout the country and then start shooting up malls and blowing up suburban developments. And then Chuck Norris is like, all right, fine, I'll start killing you. And that's the second half of the movie. So many people die.
Great job.
How long was that?
50 seconds.
Okay. All right.
Still made it. I mean, like, you could have done more on the back half, but, like, what is there to say? Like, there's some bad guys in a place.
Mm-hmm.
They think they're going to be fine in that place.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck Norris shows up in the place.
I did write in my notes, but I got nervous. So what happens is because, basically, this whole movie's like, imagine if you lived in a country where you could be shot just for shopping at a mall. And I'm like, oh, I can't imagine that. Like,
Yeah,
that's life.
Yeah, kind of.
So that was a bleak realization.
Right.
Is that why you can't see it anywhere, do you think?
Ooh, maybe.
Is that because I, when looking for my copy of Invasion USA, even in the like, you're at Best Buy and you found a box set of Chuck Norris movies.
Right.
It's not even in those collections.
Wow.
And a lot of the his other movies are on some streaming service. It looks like at a certain point, mm-hmm. whoever owns this stopped pushing it. And is it because there's too many mass shooting incidents?
It could be.
I mean, that is like a third of the movie's runtime.
Right.
Yeah. So many scenes in this movie are just, here, let's do little mild interactions with these innocent people who are about, like, there's so many, like, look at this kid being cute. Well, right. Their house is about to get blown up.
And then a couple couples just, like, making out and doing it and stuff. And like, oh my God, you got a bullet in the head.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, I noticed on the IMDb trivia that this was, until, like, the early 2000s, this was MGM's biggest selling DVD after Gone with the Wind.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. Until like maybe 2007 or something.
Were they just like not selling any other DVDs?
That's what I was wondering. They had two. I almost went to like, okay, let's look at MGM's like filmography here. Let's figure out what they all had. What were they selling?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Are there like pockets of the, let's go ahead and say the South, where this movie is like Forrest Gump, like just everyone talks about Invasion USA as a wistful crowd pleaser?
I don't know.
I don't know where this exists.
There's more to say. Our trigger happy segment could be the whole show. But first, here's this went to number one, the segment where I say the things I looked up to. Looked up, not looked up to. I don't look up to Chuck Norris. We'll get into that.
Let's be clear.
Invasion USA, released September 27th, 1985, the 12th number one film of the year. It won the weekend with $6.9 million, won easily. Number two was Agnes of God with Jane Fonda and Anne Bancroft, made $4.2
million.
Here is the best possible bit of trivia about Invasion USA. It is the movie that finally knocked Back to the Future out of the number one spot.
Really? I was going to say 12 in September. What was the movie that was in forever? And it was Back to the Future.
Back to the Future did leave number one once before earlier in the year. Back to the Future was number one for 3 weeks. Then it lost a weekend to European Vacation. Then it came back and came back for another 8 weeks.
Wow.
8 weeks.
So it was number one for 11 out of 12 weeks before Invasion USA came along, and it did not return to number one after that.
Okay.
Back to the Future was on the charts for over 9 months. Those days are gone when you can see a movie 8.5 months after
right,
it came
exactly.
out.
Well, you can, just on your TV screen.
On your television. The run for Invasion USA would not be as successful as the run for Back to the Future. It immediately fell to number four the following weekend behind the debuting Commando. Yeah. To number 10 by its third weekend, it only hung around for a month and made $17.5 million. The theatrical heyday of Mr. Chuck Norris was kind of short. It was 1982 to 1986. He made 9 movies. All but one of them made between $10 and $22 million. So like,
wait, he was making 2 movies a year?
He was making two movies a year during that stretch.
Cage levels.
Yeah.
And they were consistently mildly successful. The biggest made $22 million. One didn't work. All the rest were in that $10 million range. So he was a star, but like,
I know there's others on our list.
Just a little bit. This was his fourth number one.
Yeah.
After Lone Wolf McQuaid, Missing in Action, and Code of Silence.
I've seen the first two. I don't know what Code of Silence is. I had never heard of this movie.
No.
Yeah.
Missing in Action is his biggest. It made $22.8 million. This weekend that Invasion USA went to number one was the biggest weekend of Chuck Norris's film career. Everything I just said refers to Chuck Norris vehicles, Chuck Norris starring a project, because the actual number one of his career, which broke all of these records,
Expendables.
The Expendables 2.
Of course.
In 2012. That is, by the way, his most recent film role, his only film role since 2005. He has basically stopped.
I saw Expendables 2 in the theater.
I saw one of them, maybe two of them.
It was right after I moved to South Africa. I was sad.
I need something so American.
Most continental picture imaginable. They kept making Walker Texas Ranger until 2001.
Wait, when did it start?
Like 92, 93. What? They had like eight seasons and several TV movies. They were making Walker episodes in the new millennium.
I consistently confuse Walker Texas Ranger and Nash Bridges.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They're very different.
Who was the other one? Who was the Nash Bridges?
Don Johnson.
Oh, okay.
They're very different. Are they, though?
Are they?
No, I watched Nash Bridges as a child, and it was like, I mean, it was a Miami Vice, like, slightly into your middle age. Like, it was in San Francisco, and he was very cool and smooth, but in a wine bar kind of way. And he solved crimes when he wasn't sitting. Cheech was in Nash Bridges.
Cheech was in Nash Bridges.
And Walker, Texas Ranger, is very, like, country folksy.
Okay.
I assumed that Nash Bridges was also country folky.
No, it was a city thing. It was a San Francisco thing.
Oh. Did he wear a cowboy hat?
No.
See, he had, all right, like, Camila's with me. They're the same show.
Are you thinking of Lonesome Dove? Like, there's an additional show that
Wasn't Lonesome Dove a miniseries?
Maybe. Are you picturing Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman for some reason?
No.
I don't know why I'm imagining Don Johnson in a cowboy hat Nash Bridges.
That probably exists somewhere.
Probably.
I don't know.
I don't have details yet, so I'm not going to clarify. But at some point soon, I will also be doing written reviews of the movies we talk about for boxofficeprofits.com. And when I emailed my editor there, David Mompower, he said, oh, yeah, that was the first Red Dawn knockoff.
So I was going to say that this movie is so much worse than Red Dawn.
Red Dawn really is. What year was that?
Red Dawn was a year earlier. It was a hit. Not as big as you think. Red Dawn only made $38 million, which is a lot for 84, but it's not, it's not Back to the Future or anything.
I recall, enjoying Red Dawn for some reason and watching it a lot, I guess.
Red Dawn, the thing that Red Dawn has that this movie doesn't have is characters.
Yeah.
I mean, the bad guy is kind of an interesting character.
Trying to figure out if his face is plastic or melting off.
His face is so loose. In my notes, I called him loose face.
Oh, did you read why?
No.
Because he accidentally set himself on fire during an LSD trip.
What?
And that's why his face looks like that.
Well, now I feel a little bit guilty.
No, it's still hilarious.
It was during an LSD trip. Because, he chose that.
Because he responded to it by playing roles like this for the rest of his damn life.
It's like that one Irish actor with the scars on his face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy Flanagan?
That sounds right.
I love him.
Yeah, he's really good. But he was like, all right, well, this is what I do now.
Right.
What I was going to say is this movie also really unfavorably compares to Sharky's Machine for me. Hmm. Like, seeing this so recently after, they're like the same genre, similar formula, same, like, a lot of time spent on the creepy bad guy.
Right.
They literally have the exact same last shot.
Right.
Minus the dummy fall.
Which, what do you have without it?
Right? Exactly. Yeah. And I just was like, I wish I were watching Sharky's Machine. the whole time.
I love that this movie made you wish for Sharky's Machine.
I like Sharky's Machine. But Chuck Norris is so boring in this.
Well, that's the thing. He's boring.
Always, is he always like this in his movies?
It's the first one I've ever seen, but I think so. Like, that's his presence, is like stoic, calm. I'm going to just stand here.
Yeah.
Like a nice, like a slightly offbeat pharmacist, and until I kick you in the face. That's his thing.
But he doesn't even kick anyone in the face until the last fight.
Right. Yeah. I was like, you know what? I recall hearing a lot about Chuck Norris being a kick master of sorts, and I have yet to see this happen.
He was trained by Bruce Lee.
Was he
the fuck?
Was he maybe injured, or is there some? There was nothing in the IMDb trivia. Was he just already too old to be kicking people in the face?
No, this was really more of a shooting character.
Yeah, he just walks around. He's got the mini Uzis and shoots people. And then he says he has like the I use this word in the most extreme air quotes quips. Because
my DVD had the trailer, and one of the quips that made it to the trailer is when the bad guys tried to set off the bomb and he goes, didn't work.
Yes.
Then he throws it at them and says, it will now. That's the whole thing.
That's not a joke.
No.
I don't think his heart rate was any higher than 60 through this whole thing. Like, he's like literally just kind of like doing around and shows up and he's like real chill about everything. And maybe that's the attraction.
I'll say that is kind of compelling.
Yeah.
That, like, in a film full of loose face villains and like everyone else is at 12,
right,
that his action persona is just, I'm going to wait.
Yeah.
I'm going to wait for you to be standing right there where my gun is pointed, and then wait, I'm going to shoot you. It. Right. There's something like, I don't know. I'm trying to describe the appeal of Chuck Norris. I feel like that territory has been well covered by the internet. But like, I get it. I get why people in the 80s liked watching this guy right. calmly kick ass.
Yeah, I get okay. it. That's what I am thinking. Me not having seen him in any other context than mm-hmm. a meme or maybe a commercial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or maybe he was on Archer. I don't know. But but yeah, like just being like super calm, never breaking a sweat. He's like, his voice never raises.
Never.
And, you know, he just comes along with his couple guns and
his fanboat friend gets murdered and he just is like, well, time to burn the corpse.
Right. Okay. So that was probably the most thing that infuriated me, like aside
does
from the
fanboat guy not have a family who may have
thank
wishes?
You. Like, dude had businesses. He had things to tie up. And first of all, and I would at first, when he says John Eagle, I was like, is his name Giant Eagle?
Wait, is our beloved supermarket chain named after a secondary character from Invasion USA?
That's exactly what I thought until I saw his bar
John
sign.
Eagle.
And it says John Eagle. So it's like, okay. But yeah, I was miffed by that whole thing. It's like, okay, so the dude had nobody else that maybe wanted to say goodbye or tie up some loose ends.
Just time to burn that corpse.
Burn it down.
I loved that scene because in a movie where dozens, if not hundreds, die, including children on Christmas Eve.
Oh my God.
They were like, get in a shot to make sure we know the armadillo is okay. Get in a shot.
That armadillo,
the armadillo.
MVP.
I know.
It's a baby armadillo, people.
I was like, if something happens to this armadillo, I'm going to be upset.
Chuck Norris's nod to humanity in this movie is he seems to have some passing affection for his pet armadillo. And even though this movie kills somebody, often a child, every 8 seconds,
yes.
there is a long shot of the armadillo walking away unscathed
I'm okay.
somebody, from a building blowing up.
Yeah, update doesthedogdie.com.
Right. The armadillo does not die.
Speaking of triggers, though, I do want to...
the entire first discuss, 10 minutes?
Yeah, I mean,
the opening
I,
10 minutes?
I want to actually discuss, because my husband would be mad at me if I don't, that Chuck Norris is a problematic dude.
Oh, my God.
Just and Chuck Norris in real life?
Chuck Norris in real life is apparently kind of a white supremacist.
Oh, sweet.
And if you go on the internet, you can watch a video of him and his wife saying that if Obama is reelected, this was back in 2012, there will be 10,000 years of darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I would like to take this opportunity to say, fuck you, Chuck.
Which is...
That's all.
I was reading the stuff, the problematic stuff. We're officially in the trigger happy segment now. That's the second worst of his political moves.
Wow.
Oh, really?
After endorsing Roy Moore for Senate.
Whoa.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. He was like the last one.
Whoa.
Fuck you, Chuck.
Like,
oh,
my God. And he's written whole books that are very, like, they were, I mean, they're from the early 2000s. They were Make America Great Again before Make America Great Again. And very concerned with the border. Like, he's been like, oh, we need to build a wall for 20 years.
A seawall.
Right, apparently. This is where he got it. He said they could invade at any time.
Right.
Yeah.
But a wall won't help unless it's a seawall. These people came up in, like, D-Day boats.
The production values on this invasion, by the way, there's that one like little mini invasion crew that has the one Asian guy
right.
who were successfully disguised as Atlanta PD
right?
with
yeah.
the car, successfully disguised as Army with the Jeep.
Yeah.
And in the first scene, they had a whole Coast Guard
yes.
wardrobe.
Well, it's like, I want to know the backstory. I'd like to know the planning. I want to see.
They yeah. don't really cover this, but Loose Face is Russian.
Right.
And the Army is Cuban, so
Why?
Theoretically they have the backing of the Soviets.
Okay.
So, but they never really get into that. And
yeah,
also they've
like
got a boat
they
full of
together.
Drugs,
yeah.
so maybe that's how they, like, because the boat full of drugs doesn't really have any relevance to
it. But then when they met with a drug dealer, he didn't sell it to him, he just killed him.
Right.
And then never brought up again.
So is that supposed to make the audience feel better about them shooting up the entire boat full of Cuban refugees is because, you know, oh my God.
Who are clearly innocent.
I was like, oh, they had drugs on the boat. That's why. That's, then it's acceptable. It's okay.
What a dark first scene.
It was horrible. I was tense when they rolled up And then there's the moment and he's like, Bienvenidos. I'm like, okay, then maybe it's the, oh my God.
I mean, it is an effective scene. Like, yeah. They really do build that tension.
Oh, you know who the villain is.
That's the thing about this movie, is that this movie is really good at what it sets out to do in a lot of ways, but what it sets out to do is kind of awful. It's like,
why were we setting out to, why was this the goal? Right.
So my favorite scene in the movie is when the CIA guy comes to recruit Chuck Norris, and there's just a long shot of him rowing up to Chuck Norris's bayou house in his bad government suit, like his bad tan I'm in the CIA suit.
Mm-hmm.
He may as well have just had a t-shirt on.
Yeah, just rowing up. That's my favorite scene of the movie.
Well, and what a contrast with bare-chested but wearing two articles of denim Chuck Norris.
Yes.
Which, I like, if the whole movie was him as just a nice, mild-mannered alligator wrestler, I'd be like, yeah, that's fine. We can do that.
Sure. But he doesn't button up his shirt even when he's throwing bombs back at terrorists.
No.
No. And I was wondering, like, how many days did this go out? Because there was at one point, Chuck had several costume changes. You know, mm-hmm. there was like the button down, and then, you know, there was a tactile turtleneck.
Right.
Yeah.
Or the tactical turtleneck. He's got gloves on the entire time.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of questions about how long these guys planned all this, because you're right, the production value was astounding. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, mad props for that.
Well, I think it was like I think it was supposed to be like this global mercenary army. Like, there was some bit of dialogue early on where someone was like, you can get anybody to go to war for money these days. Yeah. And like, the actual people doing the invading, I guess to the movie's credit, weren't all clearly one thing. So was it just like, this is just guns for hire for all around the world who happen to be working for Looseface?
Maybe. And I was also curious, like, when they said Looseface, I think it was like 18 hours and America will be different.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is this happening in multiple cities around America?
They got in all those trucks, and then it was like, I'm going to Des Moines. And so, yes, is the answer.
Okay, so
and then also, I skipped in my plot summary that the trap at the end is a supposed conference of all 50 governors.
Oh,
because everybody's activated the National Guard. Okay. So it's like them meeting to talk about how do we deal with this new invaded USA.
And so, what is his actual name? Christoph?
I don't know.
The Looseface?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
Let's say Christoph.
I think it might be like Mikhail something.
I think you're right. I think it's Mikhail.
Rostov?
His name is Mikhail Rostov. Yes. Very good.
All right, nice.
So Rostov brings the entire army into the building? Like, he has this invading force that apparently is dispersed.
Very good strategy.
And just brings them all in there at the same time so that
they can be surrounded by tanks.
Completely surrounded. Like, yeah, we did it. what was the end game of this invasion? Like, it's a big country.
Right. That's what I was wondering. I have that in my notes. It's like, we're going to invade and blow up and shoot up all sorts of shit. And then...
Well, I think the idea was that we'll tear apart the fabric of their society.
Okay.
Right?
I guess.
But then they don't explore that idea in any meaningful way.
And then what?
Right. And then, again, like I said, the very depressing thing about watching this movie in 2019 is... No,
this is it.
Society keeps trucking along.
Right. We just,
We enter a zombie mode at a certain point. You're like, we know. It's fine. I guess if you can separate your mind from all context, I think the attacking the neighborhood sequence was pretty memorable.
That was dope.
So yeah.
And that got me.
I read in the trivia, which I really appreciated, was that neighborhood was being destroyed to allow for the expansion of the Atlanta airport.
And what's funny is as I was watching that sequence, I was thinking, like, this isn't CGI.
No.
Like, what did they do? Like, how did they do
They blew the shit out of a bunch of houses. That's what they did.
There is a very satisfying thing about watching houses blow up after another if you forget there are precious children inside and it's
Christmas.
Well, it was so Grand Theft Auto 15 years earlier, where it's like, I got really big weapons. I'm just going to go see what happens.
Right,
and that was kind of cool. And the fact that there was something like that in every scene.
Yeah.
Every single scene was like, oh, this is another giant action set piece? Okay. I read that somewhere, that there was more movie. Like, they established side characters and, like, fleshed out the bad guys and figured
and
out.
And then edited it
and
out.
And then we're like, no, we really just want it to be one action sequence after the other. And they cut all of that out.
Like, fuck all that
and
noise.
That's the difference between this and John Wick.
Yes. Yes, it is. Maybe they explained why Ferris wheel blew up in one of those edited scenes.
I don't remember the Ferris wheel blowing up.
That exactly, because Chuck Norris and one of the feds, I don't know, had a conversation at a blown up Ferris wheel where he was like, see what happens. And it's like, no, but I would have liked to.
Yeah,
that would have been dope.
Maybe somebody had their thumb over the lens.
Sweet. You missed it? You missed the whole thing? We can't blow it up again.
Oh, boy. It's such a bizarre movie. Everything about it is really obvious, but it's also like, wait, what? By the way, including, you started the invasion immediately before there would have been gratuitous nudity? These are monsters. Like, we'd spent 3 minutes with this couple on the beach.
Right?
True.
Getting ready, and it's like, it's a long sequence, and they're happy, and everything's, and we're like, well, at least we're going to see naked people in this movie. And then the guy walks up and is like, no, we don't have to wait any longer. Hey, come on.
Just give them a couple
Give months. Us something.
My husband was like, when that dude comes running up out of the water, he's like, I would like to report him for like, this is an irresponsible swimwear. Like, what is happening? Like, I can see his vast deference. This isn't. Apparently, because this happens a couple more times with some men's swimwear in this movie, they didn't like boxers like in the 80s. That was all about the Speedos.
Why not? Bring them back. Bring them back.
It did, however, help me invent a new improv game. So, Robin, take this if you need it. It's just a two-person scene, and at all times, one person has to be staring blankly at the other person, and the other person has to be doing something sinister but unrelated in the background. Just like twirling a switchblade or whatever.
Kind of lovable.
And then at the end, the scene must end in gratuitous, unexplained violence.
Okay.
Yeah.
I do want to talk about also the nosy reporter.
Oh, God.
One of the few side characters who made the cut.
Yeah.
Who was supposed to be played by Whoopi.
Was she?
Yes.
Oh, that would have been so great.
I think the director was it? Or a casting director wanted her originally, but somebody was like, nah.
Oh, my God. I would have loved that so much. Oh, my gosh. Well, she's just like, hey, haven't you ever heard of the First Amendment? Gee, lay off.
What are you doing, cowboy?
She calls him cowboy. That's her entire character. Every scene she's in.
Get your mitts off me, man.
She is who I wanted to be when I grew up until I was like 16. I just desperately wanted to be a sassy reporter.
And she did a great job of being a sassy. How about that sequence where she helped, I just want to call him Walker, where she helped, what the hell was his name even?
Oh, it's Matt Hunter.
Matt Hunter. Okay. When she helped Matt Hunter escape the mall violence, also good scene.
Yeah,
and like she's driving the getaway car, or wait, actually, are they chasing the other car because the bad guys are holding a lady out the driver's side window for no clear reason?
Yeah,
really earned her paycheck.
She did.
She was on there for 10 minutes.
Yeah, I'm assuming that she was just a human shield at that point.
I think
But yeah, that whole thing. Yeah, when the dude just comes and casually, like, that was the worst drop off I've ever seen. Like, he may as well just be like, oh, nothing to see here. Dropping this package. Oh, I'm just going my way. And then the other dude, the random
dude. Mister.
During the long stretch of this movie where terrorists are attacking the United States and exclusively hitting big public places, and people are totally going about their business.
Right.
Like,
it's Christmas, man. They got to get their gift. This is also one of the least Christmassy Christmas movies I've ever seen in my life.
But yeah, I guess it goes on the list.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's Christmas. How long has this been happening?
This is less of a Christmas movie than Die Hard.
But Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
Die Hard is a Christmas movie. I don't know. I think you could show it at Christmas and someone would be happy. If Spike TV was still a network, you could show this on Spike TV
at
Christmas.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a Spike. It's a very spiky Christmas.
I want to know. It's just that and Jingle All the Way, just in a loop. I want to know more about the actress who played the sassy reporter, Melissa Prophet, because she stopped working immediately after doing Casino. She had a fairly solid supporting part in Casino and then called it a day.
Really?
Who was she in Casino?
And she's alive and well. It's Jennifer Santoro. I haven't seen Casino. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's great. Oh, you should watch it.
It's been a long time.
Her last two movies were Goodfellas and Casino.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe she was afraid of being typecast.
It's like, ah, oh, that's enough of that. Like,
I'm done here. Nobody wants me for anything else. What? You want me on a show called Sopranos? No! I say nay. It sounds like a flash in the pan.
That's got to be true of a lot of those actors.
Yeah.
And then, like, by season four, they relented.
It's like, oh.
Yeah.
What I do appreciate about how that movie villains have gotten much more attractive in the progress of movie making.
That's true. So few of them have lit their own faces on fire.
Exactly.
Relatively rare these days.
Because after seeing Sharky's Machine and this, and I'm like, wow, villains were not something to drool over back in the day.
No.
Do we want to give this some numbers?
I keep going back and forth because, like I said, this is pretty good for what it is meant to be.
Right.
I just hate what it's meant to be.
Right.
Right.
Except for I don't, because, like, I do. I love movies like this. So I'm going to go 34.
Okay.
34.
That seems fair.
Camila?
25.
This will end up being in the middle of the pack. Sorry, I forgot to get a calculator out. I'm going to give it a 36, okay, which makes it my lowest rated movie, but barely. That's my blurb. It's only slightly worse than Divergent. Yay. The wow. Final score is a 31.6.
So this was your bottom film?
Yeah, just barely. I mean, we've only done five of them.
Right.
So this is the worst, but, like,
do you remember that we saw Elysium?
I didn't hate Elysium.
Weird.
I
was, that's so weird.
I was just kind of meh on Elysium. I'm
I guess
sorry.
That's where I was with this one. Like, I did not hate this movie.
No, I certainly didn't hate it. It's
and
just
it
not
did keep
good.
My attention much better than Elysium did.
Oh, same.
And just, yeah, I mean, so much shit blowing up every 5 minutes.
So the ceiling and basement remain in place. Kiss the Girls, still the best movie we've watched.
Woo.
Divergent, still the worst movie we've watched.
Okay.
Those aren't going to change. Hey, it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. That was the name of an old podcast, and it's also where we talk about things we've seen recently. Who's got a movie?
I finally saw Spider-Verse. I mean, I know, but that's kind of old and everything.
It's so good.
It was really good. Like, yeah. I really, 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 really liked it. My only complaint is the injection of the anime character. Because I have, like, an irrational hate for anime. I don't know where it comes from.
Let's unpack that.
I don't know where it comes from. It just infuriates me. Like, I'm immediately okay. Just,
so
like,
weird.
I get, like, this real, like, visceral reaction to it. It's like, oh, my God. And I was fine. Like, I'm chilling. I'm enjoying the movie. And then this little girl comes up with her friggin' telepathic spider. Is that what it was?
Something
what
like that.
Yeah. And I'm just like, oh. And I was just mad and angry and had an attitude. So, I mean, I don't know.
Well,
I don't know where it's coming
interestingly
from.
Enough, that's one of this is 1 week after we recorded our last episode, and that's the only movie that I watched other than Invasion USA this past week. I had already seen it, so I've got nothing, people.
I mean, it was really. I really like the. I don't know what the animation style is called, if there is one, but it's
they
like,
made it up,
right?
But
they
it's
really
definitely
did.
Different, and that's that's what really pulled me into.
Yeah,
that.
I was watching it with a friend who's an artist, and he was like, "Are they cel shading?" And I'm like, "What?" Aren't they doing?
Yeah. Well, and one of my favorite things about it is when all of those characters show up, the animation just around them changes.
Yes.
Right.
That she gets anime-style animation,
right.
And Spider-Pig gets Hanna-Barbera-style animation, but only where he's standing.
Right.
Like, that's really, really cool.
And just shout out to Shameik Moore, who plays Miles, and Brian Tyree. I forget.
Brian Tyree Henry.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who was the Jude Law of last year.
Love him. And yeah. Mahershala. Who,
yeah.
Mahershala Ali. So it's like, you know, shout out to
pretty
everybody. Like,
cast.
This was, yeah,
great
it was really
cast.
Good. Yeah.
No, Nicolas Cage. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. I was surprised. I was like, I was like, is that Nicolas Cage?
Yeah. Nicolas Cage had two great voice roles in comic book movies. He was also in Teen Titans Go to the Movies, finally playing Superman, which I think is so charming.
Yeah.
Teen Titans Go to the Movies was pretty good.
I really enjoyed that movie.
Like, it is much more of a pure kids movie, but for that is really funny.
Yeah. That's an example of a movie that I started on an airplane and was like, nope, I need to save this for when I can pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. I'm already liking this too much to watch on an airplane.
It's really funny.
And then, like, I watched The Wife, which was the perfect
airplane movie. Teen Titans Go has the rare, like, completely acceptable, drawn-out fart joke.
Yes.
Like, it's a good 60 seconds of the movie is one fart joke, and it's like, no, you set this up, you built it, you heightened, and you paid it off. It was excellent.
And I think that might be the moment when I was like, okay, I gotta turn this off and watch it at home.
That's great.
Also because I was laughing out loud, and laughing out loud when you're watching a movie on an airplane is always a little awkward.
It's a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, even though everybody knows what you're doing, it's still like...
It's still weird.
Yeah.
Like, I feel weird.
Don't watch me having fun.
Don't be aware of my joy. Damn it.
This is an airplane. We're supposed to all be miserable.
Exactly. Mind your business.
I haven't seen much else. I'll have seen Captain Marvel this time tomorrow as we're recording. Mm. So look for
my... Stoked for that?
Yes. Super, super pumped. There hasn't been a bad Marvel movie in a long time.
Right.
And this is one where it seems like they are trying really hard.
To make it a bad one?
To make it work. You know, they're always trying really hard.
No,
they're Marvel.
It seems like they, like Ant-Man and the Wasp, right. Like, I enjoyed that, but it seems like they were coasting a little bit.
Yeah.
And even Doctor Strange was like, we're setting this up for later.
Yeah.
Right.
But like this and Black Panther was the last one where I was like, oh, they're going really, really hard with we need to make this good. That's the way I feel about the way that Captain Marvel is being presented to us. Mm. So I'm hoping that it gets about there. I saw Greta, which I don't want to take up time with because it'll probably be out of theaters by the time this episode drops.
Really?
So it debuted in like 8th or something.
I heard,
but
it was bad.
It was not what...
It's a little polarizing, but I also follow a lot of gay men of film Twitter who are deep in the tank for Isabelle Huppert, just like I am.
She's great.
They like it.
If it were a better movie... that character would be like Norman Bates and Max Cade. That would have become an iconic, memorable character because she is so good at it. Unfortunately, the movie isn't that great.
That's a shame.
It should have been more interesting than it was. The script is actively bad. Mm. The three leads are pretty good, or the two leads and the biggest supporting character are pretty good. I didn't hate it. Like, I gave it a barely fresh rating. I was disappointed because the trailer looked great.
I have a random question for y'all. How do you guys generally watch your movies outside of the theater? Like, are you TV, are you laptop, are you tablet?
I'm a TV person.
A big loud TV.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I am trying to get it as close to.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's same. I just, I come across people who can watch. My sister, she told me she watched a movie on her phone, and I almost like
passed
out.
My husband watches TV on his phone all day, every day.
Wow.
Just like while he's working, he's got his phone playing TV and his earbuds in.
Wow.
Yep.
I can't do it.
No.
I can't do it either.
Yeah. And people do it at the gym. I feel like I've complained about this on this podcast before. Because I was about to complain about that when you mentioned the airplane thing. Yeah. Like, have you ever been on a treadmill next to a guy who's watching something and laughing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's weird.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
Also terrible. And my landlord texts me like, I can hear the bass from your television. And I'm like, well, it's 1 p.m. That's
right. That's acceptable.
Yeah. I don't know. And
insulate your house a little bit more.
Right.
My landlord lives above us, and she'll text like, I can hear it, and it's and like, I have no power in this situation. I don't know what to do, but I like, they stomp their feet around. I want to be like, I'll turn it down when you start taking your shoes off at the door. Like, we've been woken up by their feet, and she's like, I don't know, I can hear it when it's 2 p.m.
Do you want me to cut this out in case your landlord listens?
My landlord does not listen.
Okay.
If my landlord listened, is my landlord is in the list of people who listen to this podcast? Because that's the thing. Clearly, like, she has no knowledge of the fact that, like, I'm watching movies professionally.
Right.
Like, she. So,
being a dick.
This is my career.
At some point, I went, do you know what I do for a living?
Do you know who I am?
I was watching Invasion USA for a very specific purpose at 10 a.m. on Saturday morning. Well, let's pick a movie, everybody.
Yay, it's my favorite part of
every
episode.
Guess the song is after that.
Guess the song is after that.
I think it's before this every
something
week.
Good. I know. I don't know why.
Someday you'll learn.
I know.
Congratulations to now 2-week number one How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, which is on the list now.
Which apparently very narrowly beat out the latest Mendia movie.
Yeah, Mendia did not make it.
Please, for real, and this is the last one.
I was talking to somebody who said they hadn't seen this very recently, and it might have been you.
Me?
Did you
this
just,
is the movie?
Robin, did you just say to me, I've never seen Talladega Nights, The
yes.
Legend of Ricky Bobby?
Yes, I
this
did.
This is our movie?
Yes.
All right. All right.
So.
Easy, McConaughey.
I am looking for, I have seen this movie several times.
Wow.
Because my argument is, this is the best Will Ferrell movie. I don't know why people think Anchorman is better. Like, I've seen Anchorman and I've seen Talladega Nights, and I'm like, clearly Talladega Nights
is the
better movie.
Anchorman
never
is
seen
my
all
jam.
Of Anchorman because I got really bored during it and turned it off. I know. Oh, man. I'm sorry, Camilla.
Talladega Nights is made by the villain performance by Sacha Baron Cohen,
okay.
Which is what separates it more than anything, but it's really funny.
This is the one where he prays to the baby Jesus, right?
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
And Sean C. Reilly and Amy Adams. It's a stacked cast.
I'm okay with watching this movie. I do enjoy Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly together.
Not what I was expecting, but why do I ever expect anything? It's literally random.
I gotta say, you know, I am pleased with this one.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have thought that this went to number one. I guess Will Ferrell, like, really did have a moment.
Was this after Anchorman?
Yeah.
This was after Anchorman.
So that's probably...
Yeah.
In his sports period, where he just kept...
Like, semi-pro?
Semi-pro and Blades of Glory and this, and I feel like he... And he, well, there was a soccer one with...
Kicking and Screaming.
Kicking and Screaming with Robert Duvall. He just did. Hi, I'm Will Ferrell playing a sport you recognize for a long time. I believe this is the best of them. I am making the bold prediction that this will easily be my highest rated film. Let's see if that holds up when I actually watch Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby again. So that will be up next. Hopefully Aaron Kleiber will rejoin us for that, because I'm curious to see, as a slightly Ferrellian comic presence himself.
Ferrellian.
What? Not the singer with the hat. Will Ferrell. So, Invasion USA, again, as we said, hit number one in September of 1985. What was the number one song in America?
We Are the World.
Ooh, that's a good choice. But that was like 87, wasn't it?
I started at least pulling up the rest of the year. You're a few months late. We Are the World was in April of that year. Camila?
Wham, Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go?
Wham's Careless Whisper is my birthday number one, but that's in February of 1985.
Did you just have a birthday?
Yes.
Happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. Not yours. Okay, so that's a no.
That's a no. This is an iconic early music video.
Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
No.
Aha. Uh-huh.
No. Take On Me, almost. You're only a couple of weeks off from Take On Me. It is an iconic early music video, but not from like an MTV-ish band, kind of like from a white suburban dad type band.
Hall & Oates?
No.
This isn't a band, but it's a Sledgehammer by Peter Gabriel?
No.
Huey Lewis in the News?
No. I'm trying to think of how to not give it away. This song has a guest appearance by Sting.
Oh, Money for Nothing.
Money for Nothing by Dire Straits.
I had no idea that Sting was on that song.
Yeah.
He sings it. He's...
Now that you know that, you're never... Yeah. Like, I found that out, I don't know, definitely well into my adulthood.
Right.
And now I'm like, how did I not know this? Same with Mick Jagger on You're So Vain. I was like, how did I not know
Mick Jagger's on You're So Vain?
Yes.
The Carly Simon?
Yes.
I thought it was supposed to be about him.
It's about Warren Beatty.
It's not, though.
Isn't it?
I don't know.
But
have you ever read the Wikipedia on that? There's like a 10,000 word Wikipedia on who You're So Vain is about.
Oh.
Because
I know what I'm doing with the rest of my afternoon.
Right.
Like, six people in the world know, because occasionally she auctions the information off for like high ticket nonprofits. Like, if you give $50,000 to this charity, Carly Simon will whisper the name of the person who You're So Vain is about in your ear. That's a real thing that happens in the world.
I love her so much.
And on that note,
I hope she's not a white supremacist.
God. And I hope she literally whispers it in there.
We'll be back.
Knock, knock.
We'll
Carly
be back.
Simon.
To discuss Will Ferrell and check on whether or not Carly Simon is problematic next time on the number one movie in America.
Follow us.